Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Talking about chicken a la king, mango and garbanzo tabbouleh, real potatoes and vegetables with roasted garlic and basil, zucchini ziti, granola fruit bar. Look at all this beautiful food.
Guys, welcome to Green Eggs and Dan, where I interview amazing people with amazing minds, but all I care about is what is in their fridge. My guest today, this bitch.
What an intro.
We are in for a treat. She is a television writer and producer, executive producer, creator, which is to say she, like all of us, is very unemployed right now. She is the creator and head writer of She-Hulk, Attorney at Law. She also wrote on Rick and Morty, Silicon Valley, Robot Chicken, The Mighty Bee, Back at the Barnyard, Star Wars Detours, Kung Fu Panda, Legends of Awesomeness. And we met when she was writing on a beautiful little show called Bajillion Dollar Properties. Please welcome the one, the only, Jessica Gao.
Hello. I've never had someone go that deep and that far into my IMDb.
Oh, I go deep and far. That is something they say about me. Dan goes deep and he goes far.
And it's always about IMDb and nothing else.
I mean, even if we were going to sexual innuendo, I don't even know what that means, deep and far. I don't know. I tried to make it sound slick, but it didn't. Jessica, I'm very excited to have you on the pod. And I'll tell everyone why. But first, before we talk about our food escapades, which we've had a many, and they're usually very, very alcohol filled, high octane.
Yeah. It's a wonder we can remember any of it.
Are you still drinking?
Of course.
Because you and I drank so much that I was like, I wouldn't be surprised if soon one of us called the other one and was like, hey, I'm done.
I'm hanging up my hat.
I'm calling it. You guys, let's get to Jessica's fridge. You can see her fridge on my Instagram at StandUpDan. Okay. Fantastic fridge, Jessica.
Can I just say, I love my fridge. This is not SpawnCon, because as we've established, I am not a podcaster. But I have to say, this specific fridge brings me so much joy on a daily basis.
Are you saying the actual refrigerator or the inside?
The actual refrigerator. The inside actually makes me so stressed out right now because... you know, when you told me that I had to take a photo and I knew, of course, I wasn't allowed to stage it. It took like every fiber of my being to not like change a thing.
I'm glad you didn't stage it because this looks like a fridge that was staged. And it's like, whoa, no.
What are you talking about? It's like crammed to the gills. There's like no rhyme or reason.
I love it. Okay. First of all, let's start from the top. We have a beautiful medley of berries in
from the farmer's market.
From the farmer's market, because you are rich. You said that before we started. Please mention that I am rich and I shop at the farmer's market.
That's how I start every Zoom call.
Yeah. Can you please tell everyone that I'm rich? Yes, but this is an NGO podcast. Are you sure? How is that going to save the whales? Okay, then you have some sort of fancy pants drink here. What is this?
I actually don't know. Somebody brought it to my house.
People are just bringing fancy kombucha adjacent drinks to your home?
Yes.
Okay.
And I'm not a fan of kombucha, so it just sat there.
Yeah, I get it. Next to it, we have on its side a little tub of miso master organic, which has a kind of, maybe, I don't know, it depends who makes it, but could be a little fun racist picture of a what looks like a Japanese yakitori chef.
Yep, yep, yep.
Is this your go-to miso?
I guess. I don't really, it's always kind of available, so, yeah. And it's very good, so I happily get it.
Yeah, what I'm realizing from your fridge is that you're not dogmatic. You are of Chinese descent, but you are not dogmatic about Chinese ingredients, because there's a big difference between Chinese miso and Korean miso and Japanese miso, and some people really go into the weeds with that stuff. Not you. You're like whatever's on the sale rack. I'll take it.
Oh, I'm chaos miso.
What is this in the middle? It looks like a flying saucer.
It is a plate with a cover on it. With a, it's a one of those microwave covers. But if I'm being lazy and I need to put away a plate because my my awful husband didn't finish his food, I just put a microwavable cover on it and I stick it in the fridge. And so I do remember what was in here. This was some pan-fried dumplings. And shockingly, he didn't finish all of it. But he claimed he was going to eat it again in like 2 hours. So I didn't want to waste saran wrap on him. That's very Chinese of me. I just put a little microwavable cover on it and shoved it in the fridge.
And what is... It looks like you've got some like secret documents here under the plate. There's like 5 pages for some reason. It's like this is your Mar-a-Lago documents just hidden.
Yeah, my good friend Donnie asked me to hold on to a couple of folders for him. I'm so glad you asked, Dan. They are sheets of jamón ibérico.
Whoa!
Yeah, didn't think I was gonna say that, did ya?
Pew pew pew! Shots fired. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Put me in my place.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty cool. Where'd you get sheets of jamón? Again, she's saying it without saying it. Jessica's getting the residuals, everyone.
This was not purchased with residuals money. I can guarantee that.
No, this comes from the paycheck. You need to know where that Iberico money is coming from. It can't just be.
Yeah. Absolutely. This is paycheck to paycheck Iberico.
Where'd you get the Iberico from?
I got it from my favorite place on earth, Costco.
Costco's does Iberico?
Yes. It's not all, it's just some, every once in a while they'll have it. And so then that's why I buy like 5 of them, because I'm like, they're not gonna, and you know, Iberico, it's cured meat, so it'll last a very long time.
Yeah.
But anytime I see it at Costco, I'll buy like 5 packages of it.
That is so cool. Yeah. Costco once in a while will just like, but I went to my uncle's house and he had like A5 Wagyu. I'm like, where'd you get this from? He's like, Costco. I bought like a tub of it. Like,
yeah.
I have it's pretty wild, their specialty stuff, but that's very cool. Again, we've talked about Iberico before, but for those of you new to the pod, they're fancy Spanish pigs that only eat acorns on the hillsides, you know, of like Galicia, and you know, they go to Ibiza and they they tan in the sun. And they make the most delicious pork. I think I will fire shots at every other culture's cured pork and say that Iberico wins all.
Oh, 1,000% cosine.
Yeah. It's better than French charcuterie. It's better than prosciutto. It's better than anything in Italy. It's better than anything in Asia. It kills everyone.
Yeah. It blows everybody out of the water. It's Don't wild. Even try. Don't even try to come for Iberico, world.
Yeah.
World culinary community.
Don't come at me with your finocchioni, Italy. I don't give a fuck about your dumb fennel pollen, you losers. Just kidding. Love my Italian listeners. Grazie. Over here, we've got something that looks Asian. I don't know.
Yeah.
What Asian is that? What brand of Asian is that?
If you look directly below it, there is an identical...
Oh, yeah. This looks Korean to me. Is that right?
It's kimchi.
Okay, got it. So is the top one kimchi as well?
The top one is like empty. Like there's a tiny bit. There's like an inch of it left at the bottom that you can't really see. And the one at the bottom is my new replacement jar of it.
Oh, okay. Got it. So this is the upgrade. This is the hot young upgrade.
But I like keeping the old one for when I make kimchi jjigae. You know, it's better when you make it with old funky kimchi, and this kimchi still has like a lot of the juices at the bottom, and so I saved it for when I make the soup.
Kimchi jjigae is the kimchi soup.
Yeah.
What goes into that? I don't really know much about it.
pork belly. I always make it with pork belly. You can make it with like pork shoulder and stuff too. Mm-hmm. I always do pork belly because I love fatty meats. Scallions, soft tofu. But mainly the kimchi and onions.
So it's just like water and kimchi juice and you just braise everything?
Yeah, yeah. If you really want to be fancy, you could make some sort of nice stock. You can make like an anchovy stock or something, but I just do water.
That's cool. Do you cook a lot of Korean food?
I cook a good amount just because I live in Koreatown and I love Korean food. So I end up cooking a lot of Korean food. Probably the same, probably maybe even more than I cook Chinese food.
Really?
Yeah.
Is Chinese food, well, we'll get to it in a minute, but like, mm-hmm. See, I tried to connect with my culture and because I cook and I was like, I don't know how to cook any Persian food. And I was mm-hmm. like, I'm going to go on a deep dive and only cook Persian food. And I started learning all the recipes and I realized, oh no, you need to be a grandmother who has nothing to do all day to be able to cook anything Persian. It's like grandma cuisine. It's not like Italian cuisine. Anyone, it's very good single guy food because like anyone can whip that up. But where does Chinese food fall on the grandma scale?
Well, the thing is, there's such a wide swath of Chinese food just because China is so big and it has such a long history of like shifting borders and kind of encompassing like more and more like regions of people and different like ethnic minorities. And it changes so much region to region. So there is a large part of it that is grandma food, but there's also a big part of it that is, it kind of just spans everything. There's a little bit for everybody.
Yeah. Cause there's like a lot of like fast food, like worker food that was like,
oh, totally.
Let's go.
Yeah. It's like, there's like 1 minute, like noodle bowls. There's like, you know, like fried, like, pan fried pancakes with like stuffing. It's just so many different types of things, but I don't cook a lot of Chinese food. Even though I cook a lot, and I think the big part of it is because
I
hate myself. I think because just my family cooks all of it for me. And so if I need my Chinese food fix, I get it from because my family lives in LA. So so it's kind of just it's easy to be lazy and not learn because I can just go over and get it, you know. And also my family makes incredible dumplings. That's something I rarely ever order at a restaurant because I've yet to go to a restaurant where I think the dumplings are better than my family's dumplings. And
make them by hand.
Yeah. So my parents will they'll have like a dumpling day, like weekly. They'll have like a dumpling day where they'll spend all afternoon, you know, grandma style, all afternoon making dumplings. And they'll just like, you know, put on like a Chinese movie or something or like one of those long running mini series. And then they'll make hundreds of dumplings, literally hundreds, and freeze them all. And then just give me like just gigantic freezer bags full of frozen dumplings. My freezer, if you had asked for a photo of that, is mainly frozen dumplings.
No way.
Yeah. And it's great because anytime I'm hungry and I don't feel like cooking, or I just want dumplings, like I just pull a freezer bag out. They're raw. And then I pan fry them or I boil them and I have an instant delicious homemade Chinese meal.
Wow.
Yeah.
How? Okay. I didn't hear anything you said. All I was thinking was, why hasn't Jessica given me one of these bags of dumplings?
Because they're precious. They're a precious commodity.
Well, I'm a precious commodity.
That's true.
Okay?
Okay, you're right. You know what? Our friendship is a precious commodity.
Not as precious as those dumplings, apparently.
All right. I'll give you some of the famous Gao family dumplings.
Thank you. That is very nice of you. Okay, so let's go second row. We've got more kimchi. We've got a bunch of leftover stuff, some basic bitch bread. I'll ding you for that.
No. That's Ezekiel bread. So you can't Ezekiel bread basic bitch bread. Ezekiel bread is more like, you know, it's health bread.
Yeah, it's something in between. I'll give you that's okay. It's no, I went to the boulangerie and got my, you know, wild sourdough ferment.
I do that though. When I go to the farmer's market on the weekend, I do always buy like a nice.
There's the F word. There's the F word, everyone.
I buy a nice, there's two bakery booths I always go to. One, I get the nice fancy sourdough. And the other one is a French bakery that seems to be exclusively run by young Persian men.
Really?
Yes. And they make, but they make like the best, like flakiest croissant.
Croissant. Interesting. I've never had a good croissant at... I feel like the bread department at farmers markets in LA is usually kind of lacking.
Yeah.
Maybe because everyone's gluten-free. I'm not sure. But I would love to know who these people are.
I'll find out for you. Because
is this in Koreatown, the farmers market you go to?
The Larchmont Farmers Market.
Oh, okay. So I've been to that one recently. There's a woman who sells Italian stuff. She sells pasta and Italian cheeses. I've never seen more of a markup on pecorino cheese than what this woman is doing. I'm like, this is highway robbery. And I was like, any room for negotiation? She's like, no, if you don't buy it, someone else is going to buy it. I don't need you to buy it.
Oh my God.
God damn.
I also love you trying to haggle.
Oh yeah. That's what the farmer's market is for. Well, fuck them. First of all, I hate farmer's markets because I get yelled at. They yell at you. Like that you walk by and they yell. They're like, hey, you want to sample some soap? I'm like, no.
Oh, they're like hawking their wares at you. What farmer's markets are you going to?
The one in Mumbai. It's a very aggressive.
That's a really far way to go.
No, I don't know. The Melrose one, which is like kind of bougie. And they're like, just fucking yell. They're like, hey, you want some oranges, 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 oranges.
I'm like, my God. Oh, no. I got a whole routine with the Larchmont Farmers Market. I'm like in and out in like 15 minutes.
Oh, okay.
It's great.
Fun. I would love to go with you and you can hand me my bag of dumplings.
There we go. All right. I'll happily do that. Only for you.
By the way, we have another layer of Iberico on the third row.
See?
We're in the third row now.
You can see it. That's the open one. That's why it's separated from its friends.
Oh, okay. Got it. Yeah, that looks nice. You got a couple casseroles here.
Yes. Like. So that top one is a carb-free zucchini lasagna.
Okay. Who's that for?
That's for me. It's just because it cooks really quick. And sometimes I just like, I want the, you know, I want the cheesy tomato-y taste and I don't want to slave over, I don't want to make a grandma afternoon out of making a full lasagna.
Yeah.
And so it's a nice quick version that I can put in.
I guess I just got triggered a little because you said carb free and I was like, okay, now are we becoming like health nuts, you know, in the fridge? You could. It's just a zucchini lasagna.
Yeah,
I think that's okay.
If you say zucchini lasagna, that means a lasagna with noodles that has zucchini in it instead of meat. So I wanted to specify there were no noodles in this one. And also, don't be triggered. We just talked about how I eat like croissants every Sunday.
Yeah, you went from croissants, and also I like pork belly because I like fatty meats. To this is my paleo gluten-free lasagna.
Okay, this is okay. What's even more insane is the container underneath that is a homemade bolognese.
Fun.
Yes.
What do you make of? What's your meat mix on your bolognese?
I do 50% ground pork, 50% ground beef, and then of course there's the pancetta as well.
Ooh la la.
Mm-hmm.
Love. Do you use milk in yours? Do you milk it up?
Of course. It's not a bolognese without without any milk.
Oh my God. Gao, yes. I love you. I knew you were the right guest to have on this podcast.
And this is like a 6-hour sauce.
I've had a lot of shitty fridges lately because I've had a lot of comedians, and comedians' fridges are just
abysmal.
Abysmal wastelands. Yeah. Like it's like if you don't have to see the movie Oppenheimer, just go look at a comedian's fridge and you'll see the aftermath of any nuclear disaster. So this is so refreshing. Now, by the way, I'm gonna go back to the top of the fridge because I left something out. You have this lemon here.
Yes.
There's a half a lemon.
Yes.
That is sitting open side down in a little, almost looks like one of those measuring cup things that like you measure out.
It's a silicone, it's a little silicone cap for it. It's an elasticized.
Is it made for this?
It's actually made for covering up containers. So like if I had a bowl or something, I could just stretch this out over the top of the bowl again, instead of using Saran wrap.
Oh, so this is like some infomercial shit.
Yes, yes. And I use the tiniest one sometimes for a half a slice of fruit.
Does that work well?
Half a fruit. It works well enough if I'm going to like only keep it in there for like a day.
I have a lot of Tupperware bottoms and I have no idea what happened to the tops. So I need a solution like that.
You know, actually, you can, if you, most Tupperware, you can order replacement lids. And at the bottom, it'll tell you the size. If you look at the bottom of your Tupperware container, it'll tell you whatever the size is of that particular container. And then you just go online and order, like, you know, Pyrex, however, whatever the size is, like, you know, round lid. And you can just buy, I've done it so many times now where my lid disappears or then my lid cracks or something. And I just have stacks of replacement lids.
And the gold medal for immigrant child goes to Jessica Gao. Your
reigning
parents are
champion, so
proud listening to that. Can I tell you something? I'm so white when it comes to my Tupperware. This is what I do. You know what I do? Okay, here's a confession, everyone. And you can come at me. I know the environmentalists are about to get real pissed, but I basically just order those like pint things that you get, like, you know, when you get like, let's say you get like soup to go at like a Chinese place.
You order like to go containers.
Yeah, I have like hundreds of them and I use them and then I throw them out.
Oh my God. I have a whole drawer of them from when I had takeout and then I washed it out.
Wow. No. Yeah. I won't wash them out. No, what I do is I throw them out and I put a little GoPro camera on them. I poke holes in them. I put a GoPro so that I can see the seal getting stuck inside it.
Yeah. And you also love, you're also rich enough where you just waste hundreds of GoPros a year.
Yeah. Hey, it's my kink. Everyone's got their thing.
And you're sponsored by GoPro, Green Eggs and Dan.
Yeah. Little do they know what I do with their GoPro. I think once they find out, they won't be thrilled.
But yeah, I when I get takeout, I wash out the containers and then I keep them in a drawer for the specific reason of when people come over and I make them a delicious meal and then I offer them a to-go plate, I can use all of my little takeout containers and give them an actual to-go experience.
Wow.
Yeah. And then they don't have to worry about giving it back to me. They, like you, will just put a GoPro inside and throw it away.
see the sea turtle try to...
Yeah, try to eat it and die.
Try to eat it. Yeah.
While
I watch it at home on my TV while I'm eating some peanuts.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
This is very exciting. Uh-huh. In the middle, smack dab in the middle of the fridge, you have a watermelon facing... the butt side facing us. The
What is there a butt side and a face side to watermelon? It's
I mean, this looks a little bit like a butthole, like the end of. And by the way, I've never said that before. This is off the cuff. This is groundlings level improvisation.
This is improv, ladies and gentlemen. This is what you pay for when you go to an improv show.
This is me yes anding your fridge. But yes, butthole side is facing us. And it's so beautiful because then you have the green lines of the watermelon just like bringing you into it, like almost hypnotizing you, bringing your eye directly to it. Am I like on mushrooms or something? Because it's like very
it seems
cool
like
to
it.
Me.
Yes, oh, really? It does seem like that, or you really have been looking at some really sad fridges with like nothing to focus on.
Oh my God, really?
Yeah. Well, I will say, look, the lighting in the fridge is very flattering to this watermelon and its butthole.
Yeah, it is. It's kind of like, because it's like dark on the outsides and then light on the inside.
It's very like dramatic. It's this like soft halo of light towards the middle, but then it's shadow all around it. You know, it's like really emerging from the darkness.
Yeah, it's got a beautiful filter on it. It's really nice. Next up, Napa cabbage.
Love
I saw
Napa
this.
Cabbage. I why love Napa cabbage.
Does anyone know why it's called Napa cabbage? Does it have anything to do with Napa Valley?
If I had to guess, because of course this show is not about facts, because, you know, Napa cabbage is also known as Chinese cabbage. That's where it originates. And it's a big part of Chinese cuisine. I'm going to go ahead and venture a guess that perhaps the railroad Chinese who came over like from between the gold rush and the turn of the century, like a lot of them settled in like the Sacramento Delta area and really like along with Japanese immigrants, really like completely changed the agricultural landscape of California. And therefore, honestly, the agricultural landscape of America. And they brought a lot of their farming know-how of that type of environment, especially like water-based, you know, river-based kind of farming. And I would imagine they probably cultivated Napa Chinese cabbage, but it is in that, you know, kind of Napa area. This is my guess.
Wait a second. I'm not even going to look that up to confirm it. I love that. I love that reality of it. It's real.
Like I have done a lot of reading on like the Railroad Chinese. So that like the stuff I'm saying about the Railroad Chinese are is true.
It's also one of the reasons, and this is very interesting. I had a guy who was he had a documentary about Chinese restaurants all over the world called it's some Chinese expression that translated means like, have you eaten yet or something like that.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a very common greeting.
And yeah, he said part of the reason why every single small, like as a comedian, I've been to all every state, traveled to all these little tiny towns. There's, I don't care how fast foody the town is where they just have McDonald's and a Wendy's, there's always going to be a Chinese restaurant.
It's true. It's totally true.
And it's
true.
Like they're, and it's fascinating how, mostly because of the railroad, I think they just ended up in all these, every single nook and cranny of America.
Yeah. Serving up delicious food.
Yeah. I think the oldest restaurant, one of the oldest still running restaurants in America is a Chinese restaurant in
Colorado.
Montana. I think it's in Montana. And it's like, it used to be like, you know, an opium den and a Chinese restaurant, and it's still running. It's pretty amazing. Chinese American culture is very fascinating food wise.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, enough fucking history.
People don't come to this podcast for a history lesson.
Okay, what is the sesame sauce? So there's a jar. This looks like Chinese, if I'm
correct.
This is Chinese.
It's sesame paste. And it kind of goes hand in hand with the Napa cabbage.
Y'all got tahini.
There is a difference between sesame paste and tahini.
Okay.
Sesame paste is a lot thicker, at least in my experience. So in Chinese hot pot, I mean, it also, the sauce is also varied depending on what region of China you're from. So I'm from Beijing, which is in the north.
So northern, correct me if I'm wrong, is more noodle based than rice based. Rice based is the south.
It's noodle and dough based foods.
Yeah.
That's why dumplings are such a staple of northern Chinese food.
Din Tai Fung, northern Chinese.
I think Din Tai Fung originated in Taiwan.
Oh, okay. Got it.
Yeah, but yes, like dumplings is very
normal. I'm not here to cause an international incident.
So with a hot pot, or at least the kind that I like to have, the sauce, the dipping sauce, should we talk about what hot pot is? Maybe your entire audience. Okay. So hot pot, if you've ever had shabu shabu, like that's the Japanese version of hot pot. So hot pot is basically, think of it as fondue, but with broth. So you, at your table, you would have a boiling pot of broth. And a lot of restaurants will have their like signature broth, you know, and you can buy like packets of the seasoning for it. And they all kind of guard their secret recipe for the broth. So you have a boiling pot of broth, and then you get all kinds of like vegetables, such as Napa, where you slice it up. And then incredibly thinly sliced meat. That you dip in, you cook in the hot broth. And because they're all like, you know, so thinly cut, I mean, the meat will cook in a matter of seconds.
Right.
So, you know, like you can put in tofu and it'll cook in like a minute. You can put in like fish balls. There's so many different things you can put in there. And then you take it out, with your chopsticks, or with like a little tiny scoop, and you dip it in your little dipping sauce, and then you eat it, and it's delicious. The dipping sauce that I'm used to is sesame paste, Chinese barbecue sauce, a little bit of sesame oil, some soy sauce. That's like the simplest base of it. I mean, some people like to put in like chopped cilantro, or they might want to put in some like fermented bean curd. Like there's a lot of variations of, you know, people put chilies in there or like minced garlic. But the base the base sauces, sesame paste, Chinese barbecue sauce, sesame oil, and soy sauce.
Yeah, delicious. And I like to pit Asians against other Asians food-wise. I like to start beef. And I've said very famously on this podcast that I think Japanese soups, ramens, kick Korean soups' asses. We've gotten a lot of shit for it.
Well, look, why do you have to pit all of these people against each other? Why are you sowing discord and division?
Oh, I'm sorry. the East gave us Iron Chef, okay? Which is basically pitting people up against each other. I'm just taking it from the culture. And I will say, Chinese hot pot beats shabu shabu any day of the week.
Yeah. Okay. Well, okay. If I am totally for pitting these cultures against each other, as long as Chinese is the winner.
you definitely win there. I mean, Chinese fucking always wins because everything basically comes from Chinese cuisine.
Like, thank you. That's so true.
It's like literally everything has a base in Chinese cuisine. And it's like, that's why I'm like, you know, whenever when people are like, oh, you're culturally appropriating this food, I'm like, everything came from China. If you want to play the cultural appropriation game, then everything we eat we need to give credit to China before we talk about it. Like churros basically are a bastardization of a Chinese thing. I mean, it's like everything comes from fucking China.
Yes, it's true. And so I take full credit for every country's cuisine.
So I'm not even going to do a deep dive on who came up with the sesame paste first, China or the Middle East, because I know what the answer is going to be. It's always China.
I do love like seeing the kind of like similarities between like some sort of base foods between like different cultures. Like it's just so fun tracing like, oh, where did the historical interaction come from? Or was it like a shared region at some point? You know, like all of that is like very fun.
It is very fun. It seems like the one food that hasn't really made its way or that didn't come from China and also hasn't really made inroads in China, correct me if I'm wrong, is cheese, dairy, cheese, that type of thing.
Yeah, it's just not big. It's not a big part of Chinese cuisine.
I wonder though if that's, you know how like the nouveau riche in China, like they get into very like they all love Bordeaux and they're and steaks and you know love getting into sort of Western fancy Western foods. I wonder if they're starting to develop the palate for like a fancy stinky cheese.
Probably, but they have to contend with such a high rate of lactose intolerance.
Yeah, that's true.
And thankfully, I'm very thankful that I'm Chinese, but not lactose intolerant. And I have the enzyme, as you've seen, to digest alcohol. I don't get the flush or anything like that.
No, and I don't think I've ever been with anyone who drinks as much as you do and stays as in control as you do. I feel like when you and I go drink for drink, I turn into a slurring Muppet. And you're like reciting sonnets, like you still have it all together.
Yes, it's very, very rare that that I get drunk. Like, I think I can count on two hands the amount of times I've been drunk in my life.
Oh my God.
But I'm a pretty controlled drinker, like because I do have a high tolerance. The only time I get into trouble is if I drink on an empty stomach. And I would say half the time that I've been drunk was because I drank on an empty stomach. But if I had a full meal, I can drink all night long. But when it does happen, it's a fucking nightmare. Like I can feel, and it happens so quick. Like one minute I am reciting sonnets and talking about the history of Napa cabbage in California. And I can feel the change happening. And when I start feeling the change happening, I know that I have 10 minutes before I'm just out of control, like a maniac. So, so it's gotten to the point where like when I feel the change, the few times that it's happened, when I feel the change, I basically go to my husband and say, we have to leave right now. And
oh my God,
10 minutes to get me to safety or else I might start puking.
By the way, this was the pitch for She-Hulk. You were like,
I have this
thing where I turn into a different human being.
Yeah, where I turn into a pukey, psychotic human being.
Wow, that was the craziest pitch ever. Give her a show. Well, look, amazing fridge. I'm very, very impressed by it. I give you kudos. You will get a good rating. I'm not quite sure what it is yet. I don't like to say it on air, but
oh boy,
you will. Although the last person, Payam Benifaz, actor, he was our only 1.0 that was ever given.
Wow,
you got a literal fucking one.
Damn.
No, you will do well. I promise. You'll be in the eights at least.
I better, or else whether or not you get a bag of frozen dumplings hangs in the balance.
Ooh, you know I'm addicted to influencing. I'm addicted
that's
to
true.
Influencing.
You really are. You really are.
So I will. That's all you had to say. 10.0, everybody.
Oh,
10.
Boy.
10.0.
And you know what? I still feel like I earned it.
No, it's a great fridge. It will not get a 10, but it'll get enough of a score that will earn me the dumplings, and you'll feel okay giving them to me.
All right, to be discussed off air.
Gao, where did you grow up?
I was born in China, and then I came to LA when I was 4. There was a brief year where then they sent me back to the old country, but yeah. When I was like 7 or 8. But
what was that about? Were they like, let's try again? She might be.
I mean, kind of like.
Really?
Well, the party line I got was that they really wanted me to cement the Chinese. You know, like they wanted me to go to school there, learn how to read and write. They were also afraid that because I was going to school in America and I was speaking a lot of English, that I would lose the language. You know.
Yeah.
But I will say, when I came back from my first of all, I grew up in the San Gabriel Valley, which is like all Chinese people. There's like a Chinese school every 2 blocks. Yeah. So didn't really have to be that drastic. And when I came back after 1 year, my parents' house had all these framed pictures of them going on amazing vacations all year. So I think they just took a break.
Hilarious. How is your Chinese?
It's perfect.
Really?
Yeah. I like when I go to China, when I speak, people think people don't think I'm American. They think I'm a local, but I'm a functioning illiterate because I only went to first grade in China. So.
Got it.
And also, it's one of those things where you lose it if you don't use it, you know, because reading Chinese is pure memorization. There's no like phonetic alphabet where you learn this and then you can put it. So you're literally memorizing every single character. And so when you look at a word, you either know it or you don't. There's no like sounding it out. And I only learned enough words for first grade and then never used it again. So I mean, I text with my parents in Chinese, but it's like very basic stuff, you know?
Right.
I mean, I only speak Chinese with my family, so.
Mandarin or Cantonese?
Mandarin.
All right. Can I practice?
Oh boy.
You ready for this?
Oh God.
It's going to get fast and furious real quick.
Well, you are a polyglot. So I feel like I wouldn't be surprised if you actually were very good at it.
Here we go. Ready? Ni hao.
That's it?
That's not the response. We're having a conversation. Ni hao.
Ni hao.
我的名字是 Dan.
哦,真好,我的名字是 Jessica.
哦,你很美.
哦,谢谢.
我爱你.
Oh, that's a little forward.
我可不可以摸你的奶奶?
Oh, Dan.
What happened?
Well, what happened is I just clinched a sexual harassment lawsuit against you. And now I can go to the farmer's market every day.
Wait a second. I can deny it. I was taught that that means thank you for having me over.
Oh, and has that phrase been helpful to you?
Yes. I'm actually not allowed to travel to anywhere.
Any Asian country.
Somehow I got an Asian ban. Just any Asian country.
Yeah. The International Alliance of Asian Countries issued a statement.
I learned that in high school. There was a Chinese student who taught me that. And it basically means what I said was, hi, my name is Dan. You're beautiful.
Very pretty. Uh-huh.
I love you. Mm-hmm. And can I feel your boobs?
Yes.
And I just want to say it was a different time, Jessica.
I will say here's the thing. Chinese is a tonal language. So unless you get the tones exactly right, it's very hard to understand what someone is saying. And so it's always impressive when someone is able to pronounce things enough where you can actually understand. So just as I knew you would, you did great.
Oh my God. Thank you. Am I still getting sued?
Oh, still. Yeah, obviously.
Well, guess what?
Napa cabbage has absolutely nothing to do with Napa Valley. In fact, the cabbage was around way before Napa Valley was even a thing. Napa cabbage's story begins over two millennia ago in the rich and diverse soils of China. Ancient farmers recognized its crispy texture and mild flavor, and it soon became a staple in Chinese cuisine. Its name, Napa, is derived from the colloquial term Napa, N-A-P-P-A, used for various types of Asian leafy greens. The cabbage soon hopped over to the Korean Peninsula and Japan, where it quickly found itself embraced by these culinary cultures. Korean cuisine made Napa cabbage a star ingredient in its beloved dish, kimchi. The Japanese incorporated it into various dishes, including pickled delicacies and hot pots. In conclusion, Napa cabbage has absolutely nothing to do with Napa cab, even though it sounds very similar. Okay. All right, let's get to the questions.
Okay.
Questions that I ask every guest, starting with, what is your earliest food memory?
I have two early food memories I would love to share.
Please.
And both have to do with being a little immigrant kid.
Okay.
One was when I came to America when I was four and started going to preschool here. I remember very distinctly like kids at school being like, usually like non-Asian kids at school who are like, oh, I hate vegetables. And also seeing it on TV, like it was such a trope that like kids are like, I hate vegetables, you know? And it was such a weird concept to me because I was like, because in Chinese cooking, it's not like vegetables aren't a thing that you have to eat. You know, vegetables are treated like its own dish that still needs to have flavor brought out. And, you know, it's like, it's the same as anything else. And so to me, it was so arbitrary to be like, I don't like vegetables.
Mm.
And then I started getting school lunches and I was like, oh no, this is what people think vegetables are. Like, this is terrible. And then my other memory was, you know, because I only ate Chinese food, like white food was so exotic to me because I have such a distinct memory of in preschool getting a taste of a bologna and cheese sandwich on white bread. And I was like, my mind was blown. I was like, what is this incredible, delicious food? This is
sorcery.
Yeah, this is like, I'll do anything for another bite. I'll do anything. Like, it was, I couldn't believe it. And I'd go home and tell my parents about this incredible thing that I ate. And I would ask for it at home and they had no fucking clue what I was talking about. But I would not shut up about it because I just desperately wanted it again. You know, I was like fiending for it. And finally, my parents were like, okay, fine. Let's try to like recreate this. So then we go to a white supermarket, you know, and they're like, okay, tell us what's in it. But I'm a child. So I don't even know what bologna is. I don't even know if it's meat, you know? And so I'm like, okay, well, we need bread, we need bologna, but I don't know what bologna is, you know? And then I was like, and then there's a slice of cheese, but my parents have zero experience with cheese. So we go to like the, you know, the little cheese display and they're like, okay, well, which one is it? There's like 20 of them. And so I was like, okay, think, Gao, what's the cheese? What's the cheese? And I remembered in cartoons that, you know, cheese has holes in it. Like you in cartoons, you always see like a slice of cheese with holes in it. So I was like, I know for sure that's cheese. So then I had them buy me a package of sliced Swiss cheese. And long story short, what I ended up with was a slice of white bread, a slice of Swiss cheese, and a hot dog.
Oh my God. Hilarious.
And that was still good, but it wasn't bologna.
No, it's not bologna, but it's still pretty good. That sounds pretty fun. That's a good earliest food memory. I also just wanted to clarify, when Jessica says it was a white supermarket, she did grow up in the antebellum South. So this was a whites only supermarket. Okay, your death row meal. So you're on death row. Let's think of a reason that Jessica is on death row. Okay, how about after the podcast? I do research about your Napa cabbage fun fact, and and I come over to get my dumplings, and I'm like, oh, by the way, you were wrong. It has nothing to do with China. There's no China. It was literally just a Napa Valley thing. Like Robert Mondavi made these this cabbage, and you were totally wrong. And then you were like, no, and then you grab that last little bit, the little half an inch of kimchi juice and like chloroform me in the face. Yes.
But I screamed no because I was like, the world can never know this. Like, right. I have to protect my secret, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
The honor of my people.
You murder me, as much sympathy as the court has for your plight, you're now on death row.
Okay.
What is your death row meal?
It's rough because I'd be the biggest pain in the ass because I'd want to curate a meal with like every element would be like my favorite from a different place, you know?
Mm.
Like, well, first I'd want like a small A5 Wagyu steak.
Mm-hmm.
I probably want some sort of fried chicken. Right. Currently, my favorite fried chicken is the Szechuan fried chicken from Intergru in Koreatown.
Whoa. Wait, tell me about that.
Oh, it's so good. It's so, 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 so good. It's just nice and moist, but, you know, delicious Szechuan seasoned breading served with chilies and cilantro on top.
So you're getting numbed out by this a little bit.
It's not super numbing, but it's just great.
Oh, I love it. What's the name delicious. Of the place?
Intercrew.
Intercrew. Intercrew.
It's named after, so in the 90s, there was like an Asian club called Intercrew.
Oh,
and okay. And this restaurant is paying homage to that.
I was going
to
say, it sounds like yes. A teen girl clothing store.
Right? Yeah, yeah. But it's delicious.
Wow. Fun. Yeah. Okay. So we have the A5. We have the fried chicken. You're going to die of cholesterol before the electric chair gets to you. What else?
Yeah. What do I care? You know, I'll just stuff myself with all kinds of stuff. Like I probably want some Jenny's ice cream.
Mm.
One of my favorite flavors that was only seasonal and they've never brought back is called sun popped corn.
Interesting. Is it more popcorny or corny?
Corn, which I love. It's very sweet corn. It almost is like corn pops ice cream.
I think that corn is one of those foods, you know, a lot of people say about peaches that mm-hmm. there's nothing better than a fresh peach. So like anything you put a peach in, it's not going to be as good. I think corn is the opposite. I like corn, but when I have corn that's been processed in some way, if it's in a pasta, if it's in an ice cream, the flavor of corn is enhanced so much by zhuzhing it. Or like a corn souffle I had once that was delightful.
I think corn is just great in all forms, like a perfect ear of corn, love and anything. But I agree with you, like corn flavored things, almost always delicious.
Yeah, the best.
I recently made a sweet corn mochi cake that I think really enjoy. Yeah.
Way to bury the lead, Gao. I love this. This is becoming Gao mentions foods that Dan will never have. That's what this episode is.
And yeah. I love to be withholding. Like any good Chinese woman, I love to be withholding.
Join my OnlyFans and you can have my corn mochi too.
I would want a nice big fat slice of red velvet cake.
Mm, give it to me.
Yeah. Probably a chocolate milkshake. Let's see. What else? I don't know. Some sort of pasta. Oh, you know what? I'd want the pappardelle al fumo from Osteria Mama.
Whoa. What's the al fumo? What is like smoky pappardelle?
Yes. And it's a pink sauce and it has, I want to say it's guanciale, but maybe it's pancetta.
Fun.
Mm-hmm. It's very, very good.
I want to go to jail with you.
Yeah. Let's have a great time.
Let's commit a double homicide.
Yeah. And I'd want, because, you know, of course, the jail has to give us whatever we want. Oh, you know what? I'd want the bread and butter from Gwen. And then I'd want a little sushi set curated by Chef Nozawa.
Whoa.
Yeah. This is going to be a very expensive last meal. And they have to do it because it's my last meal.
OMG. that is a very good last meal. I'm with you the whole way.
Yeah, I'm going to beat them at their game because then I'm going to eat myself to death so that they can't kill me.
I'm almost hoping that you actually do end up on death row so that I can see this happen. This is exciting. What's the best high-end meal you've ever had? And I'm going to also asterisk this by saying lately, Dan Adut's favorite high-end meals / tasting menus are Chinese tasting menus.
What?
The upscale Chinese experience of tasting menus to me is way more exciting and interesting than like the traditional French or American-y ones. Mm-hmm. Like it is a fun experience. But anyway, I don't want to cloud your judgment. What is your best high-end meal?
It's hard to say, honestly, because I feel like I'll have a fancy high-end meal and I'll be like, that was great. And then the next time I have another one, I'll be like, no, that was the best. And yeah. It's just truly like whatever was most recent to me is what I remember the most fondly.
Okay, give it to me.
A couple months ago, I went on my honeymoon and, mm-hmm. And we were in Hawaii. We were in Honolulu, and the driver who picked us up from the airport gave me a bunch of food recommendations, all bangers, all of his recs. And he had us go to this restaurant called, Muro Kaimuki.
Okay.
And it was tasting menu only, but with like a ton of add-ons. And it was just a wonderful, delicious meal. One of the add-ons we got were these three brioche toasts. And one had seared ahi, perfect, delicious, buttery fish. One was caviar and one was Japanese uni.
Mm.
And it was just incredible. It was like one of the best things I've eaten in recent memory.
No way.
But we've cool. also established that my memory for tasting menus is very short.
Right. Yeah. You're like, my favorite one was probably at Jones on 3rd this morning. Had an egg sandwich served in one course. What is the best low-end meal you've ever had?
Well, here is a meal that I don't think should qualify as low-end, but it only qualifies in the sense that it's not high-end. So a few years ago, I took my husband to China, and he'd never been to China. And we, you know, ran all around the country, and it was a very like well-curated experience because both my parents are travel agents.
Right. Oh, cool. Amazing.
And so we went to, you know, a part of southwest China, Yunnan. And, you know, a big part of China is very agricultural. And yeah. So, I mean, all throughout the country, there's just, you know, like rural areas, there's just a lot of small family farms, you know, that's a way of life that you can actually live, you know?
Yeah.
And what's been happening is a lot of these farmer families, their version of like a bed and breakfast is they'll build like guest houses, additions on their property, and you can go and stay there. And then they cook all of your meals for you using stuff they grow.
Oh, fun. It's like a Italian agriturismo.
Yes, totally. Yeah.
Awesome.
And like, you know, it caters to like domestic tourists, like people in China, like from cities will like do this. And so when we were in Yunnan, we had family friends there and they were like, oh, well, we're really good friends with this one like farming family. So we'll just call them and say, we're going to go eat. We're not going to stay there. And so they called ahead. We went for dinner and they prepared this like 10 incredible like 10 course meal that they'd been working on all day, and it was one of the best meals I've ever had in my entire life. And they grew everything. It was like the garlic they used, they grew like there were two different mushroom dishes, and they were like, oh yeah, we foraged these mushrooms this morning when we were taking the goats out. Like literally everything they was from their farm, and it was just the most like the freshest. I mean, you can't get a fresher meal, you know. Like literally
amazing.
Farm to table at the farm.
I just want to clarify to everyone listening, wondering if Jessica is actually very rich or not, that her best high end meal and her best low end meal are both 10 course tasting menus. Okay. Most people are like, the Taco Bell Chalupa. No, Jessica, it's another 10 course tasting menu.
Well, look, that's why I had to specify. I don't know. I don't think this counts as low end, but compared to the high end, it is.
I love it. No, that's delightful. What is your favorite drunk food?
Well, as we've already established, I'm very rarely drunk. So, and usually by the time I'm drunk, I throw up within 10 to 15 minutes and then pass out. So there is no drunk food in my life.
I'm sad.
I know. And then weirdly, I also don't get hungover. But probably because I rarely am drunk.
You and alcohol have a real will they, won't they?
I know, right?
Who's your favorite celebrity food personality?
This is disappointing, but I don't have one because I don't really follow celebrity chefs. Like, I'm actually not like a cooking show.
Sorry, but you're literally talking to one right now. So that really hurt where you're like, no, no one does it for me.
Yeah, no
not
one does it
one
for me.
Of these food personalities.
And you know what? In fact, I hate food personalities. They're all awful.
There's awful things going on in the world. Now I got to listen to this guy talk about how good the food is. Fuck these people.
I do watch a lot of Great British Bake Off, I will say.
Yeah, I don't know. I liked it. I didn't love it. People fucking go nuts for that show.
Yeah.
I'm having lunch today with the creator of Is It Cake, by the
way. Oh my God.
Yeah. Dropping names. Dan mm-hmm. Cutforth. See you soon, buddy.
Well, now it makes sense why you had a you insisted we push up this Zoom.
That's actually true. Okay, what is your desert island food? You're trapped on a desert island. One food you're going to eat for the rest of your life. You're never going to get tired of it.
I think it'll probably be either soup. Like there is a specific like Mexican / South American soup that I love.
Which one? Like a pozole type thing?
No, it's called cocido. And it's brothy. It's made with beef and tons of vegetables. You serve it with a side of Spanish rice. Mm. I make it all the time. It's delicious. It's you make it with like beef oxtail and short rib and whatever. And or if you want, you can pat it out with like cheap cuts of meat. But as we've established, I eat wealthy. So
yeah,
I populate my soup with oxtail, and which wasn't always an expensive cut. It was supposed to be a cheap cut until the
that's
whites
the worst.
Ruined it. Yeah.
The whites. The whites.
Yeah. And a lot of short rib.
Yeah, that is. I like how you eat. You eat richly. Jessica's the only person to have gotten gout when she was 4 years old, by the way. She was a toddler with a throbbing toe.
I did have such high cholesterol at age 23. I had to go on medication.
No. I love it. You go hard. You go hard in the paint.
Look, I love life. What can I say?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm with you. But is there something that you don't love? Is there a food that you can't stand eating?
There's a drink that I don't love.
Ooh,
I can't stand the taste of root beer. It makes me gag.
Wow.
Yeah.
I love root beer.
It's the most disgusting taste to me.
Wow. I mean, I could get that. That makes sense to me. I could see some people having an aversion to it.
But there's nothing else that I hate. Like, and also over the years, there's been a lot of things where I was like, I don't care for it. And now I'm like, you know what? I'm into it.
I feel like the older we get into way more bitter flavors than we ever did when we were younger. Like, I'm like espresso, no sugar, nothing. Put it in my veins.
Oh, you know what? Chocolate. I don't like coffee.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I don't drink coffee. I've never gotten into coffee. I don't like it.
I mean, you are a tea people.
That's true. But I also just don't drink any caffeine.
No way. This is just you high on life?
This is me. Can you imagine if there was caffeine? When I drink tea, I only drink naturally caffeine-free herbal teas.
Wow. You're like, yeah, no caffeine. Just one little hit of meth in the morning. Keeps me going.
Like everyone else, right?
Okay, it's time for my favorite question. Last question. What is or are your restaurant pet peeves?
Well, systemically, my restaurant pet peeve is the tipping system in America, in which where restaurants do not pay their workers a living wage, and then instead put that financial responsibility on the customer, but make it optional so that wait staff are at the mercy and whim of customers, and they're never guaranteed that money, which I think is complete and utter bullshit and really sucks. And waitstaff should just get paid well enough where they can actually live. And it's like, then built it into the cost of the restaurant, like charge that, like make the cost of the menu enough so that you can actually pay your waitstaff well.
And I especially hate the middle ground area where they're like, there's a 5% service charge for the back of the house. I'm like, why don't you pay the fucking back of the house?
Yeah. Build
and
it
charge
into the
us
cost.
More.
Yeah. Just charge more for everything.
Yeah.
And pay everybody.
I'm with you 100%.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know enough about the finances about that stuff, because it's also like, well, you look at like people who work at a clothing store, they're getting paid on commission. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if it's like the commission system. It does also mess up. It ruins the dining, not ruins, but if you compare it to Europe, it's like you can sit at a table in Europe for fucking 3 hours and they don't give a fuck.
Yeah.
Because they're not like turning and burning. Because they're not getting paid by the person necessarily.
Yeah.
Which makes the experience For me, a lot more enjoyable. I know for a lot of Americans, it's like infuriating. They're like, why is my water never here? Like, fill up my water. And it's like, no, it's a lot more relaxed system. Like, it's just like, you're there, you're hanging out.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I'm with you though. Tipping is very, it's an annoying dance. And also the other way around is when you go to a restaurant that you have to stand in line, you have to mm-hmm. order, you have to grab your food, you have to bring it to your table, you have to bus your food, or they give you, if you want to go, they just drop the box off at your table and you got to fill up the box, the to-go box yourself. And then they have the gall on their little iPad to have three options, 20%, 22%, or 25%. I'm like, I did everything here. Short of cooking the fucking food, I did everything.
Oh, man. It's a fuck system. It's so stupid. I hate it so much.
That's why you cook at home so much.
It's true. It's true. I do love a good restaurant experience, though. And but I also have like, you know, the churn and burn. Like, I do have a little bit of anxiety of like, if I'm at a busy restaurant, like as soon as we're done, like, and everybody else wants to linger, I'm like, we got to go, because they have to turn over this table. Like, we can't be sitting here, you know?
Yeah, I get that. I'm a little bit like that too. You got to be a little self-aware of what's going on at the place.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, if the place is half empty, then I'm like, I don't care. Like, they're not going to care if we sit here for another half hour. But
yeah,
if there's like, you can see people waiting like for a table, like I just can't focus and I can't relax.
Well, Jessica, you just left it on a very sad note, because
oh no,
I thought this was such a positive, fun episode and people get to see how excitingly delightful you are. But then you ended it by saying, because if the restaurant is half empty, not half full.
Oh my God. Well, you know what? Turn that mirror back around on yourself, because maybe your last question shouldn't be about restaurant pet peeves. Shouldn't be about someone's biggest complaint.
It's true. I get people all riled up and I'm like, all right, see you later. Thanks.
Have a good day. Time to go to lunch.
Jessica, tell the people where they can find you, where they can find your work, all that stuff.
Don't find me.
Leave me alone. You're not getting my dumplings.
Yes, it's true. I'm just very, very inactive on social media. So there's no point. Don't find me, but I don't really post, you know? So I'm sorry. I mean, but you can watch She-Hulk on Disney Plus.
Yeah. Oh, she just like created and wrote a fucking show. So you can go watch that.
Yeah. So like no big deal.
Look how dumb social media has gotten us, where you're like, well, I don't really have anything really, because I don't tweet, but I do have a TV show that I made. in case you want to see that body of work. But my apologies for not giving a play-by-play of my dumb life.
It's true. So when I do eventually give dumplings to Dan and or murder him because of Napa Cabbage related politics, you'll never know.
Never.
I certainly won't be tweeting about it.
I know. It'll be like, someone who murdered Dana Dude will never be caught because she doesn't have social media. That's all it's going to take, is just don't fucking sign up for any social media and you can murder everyone.
Yeah, that's the one takeaway from this episode that I hope everyone walks away with.
Yeah, everyone's like, what are you going to do? Twitter or Threads? Do neither. And then you can kill all the people.
Okay, see, that's a good note to end on.
That's a great note to end on. Thank you so much, Jessica. This was as delightful as I knew it would be.